session number 16711, Fred Welsh, reel 16.
Mr. Welsh, reel 16. What hours did you start working in your working camp?
Your work started at six in the morning. But you had to walk to get to work first. So reveille was about 4:30. You finished work at 6 o'clock at night, and you had your walk back again. And then you had your ablutions. You had to get your bath. Whatever, and then quite easy there. We had a big stove there, and you could cook a meal quite easily.
So when you got up at 4:30 and obviously got ready and so forth, what happened to you then? Did you get a breakfast or some kind of drink or food?
You got your own drink. Somebody always had a cup of tea ready for you, because there was shifts running about, and there was always somebody had a pot of tea going. And if you came in from work, the next guy would say, oh, there's a pot of tea in my pot, you can have that. So there was never a really good bunch of lads. That's the crowd I'm on that photograph with. And they say you walk to work, and we worked in the dam itself at first, right in the hall.
What were you doing?
Well, the first job I had, and as I say, I seemed to be chosen by the Germans as a spokesman or something wherever I went. And my first job, they used to be making concrete, and they used to make it in great big mixes up height, great big huge things, which fed down into the job with great big pipes. First time I'd ever seen that system. And we were loading little bogies, V-shaped little trucks, and the engine used to shunt them into the quarry, about 8 of them. We used to fill them with gravel. Well, this is when you learn to be awkward. You got a shovel. There was 3 of you on a troop, or maybe it's 4, loading it up with gravel. But instead of filling your shovel, you put about 4 little pebbles on the shovel. And it worked out that by 9 o'clock, they were looking for gravel up the mixer. Trucks weren't ready. So in come the guards to find out what had happened. Why wasn't this full? The boss used to come, and the head man of this dump was a proper Nazi, big man in the Nazi party, had all the badges in him. Real Nazi man he was, Weiss, they call him. Well, we did it the next day, and it finished up. You were put in front of a tribunal, which was your sergeant major went, and we had a solicitor's clerk in our group, and he went with you. And the German, and this Mr. White, and the man in charge of prisoners in the area, who was a major. Well, you begin to stretch the Red Cross a little bit now. And you're accused of not working. This is sabotage for them. Sabotage was a big word. Everything you did wrong was sabotage. So you stand up and you're asked to say your piece, and this solicitor's clerk gets up and speaks for you. He says, I can't understand the problem about this working. And he said, what does the guard mean when he said he wasn't working? The guard says, well, it took them all day to fill one bogey. And this fellow says, so what? And the major, who was chairman of this tribunal, said, what are you getting at? Well, he said, if you'll turn to the convention, it says prisoners below the rank of corporal must work. He says, that's right, and these men weren't working. And he said, what he says, why, who filled the bogies? Why, he says, these prisoners. But he says, it took them all day. Oh, yes, he says, I agree. But he says, the convention doesn't say that you shall work hard. And believe it or not, you got away with it. But you get took off the job. So our next job, we go into the, right into the bottom of the camp, and we are collecting up the shuttering of yesterday's concrete. And snowing like billy, or a blizzard blew. You never stop work. So we decided what they call, I think it was Korten Arbeit, which was contract work. Whether I've got the roads right, I don't know. And we said we would clear this timber, take the nails out and use it again, if we could go home when we're finished. Which they agreed to, because it meant the guard could also get home. And when we'd finished, again, I was the one at the front again, they said, will you shift that prop there? Oh, I said, no, that's not shoot room. And I finished up with a bayonet in my coat. And he said, if you don't shift it, I'll bayonet you. And one of them lads on there, Chalky White, well, I says, don't forget, man, we're all witnesses. You'll not get away with it. If you kill him, we'll kill you. Later on, we'll find you. And I'm afraid they were so simple that they believed that. Because these guards, I must say, were no younger than 65. If you saw a German man around the towns, he was either crippled or he was aged. The rest were in some sort of uniform. So we were looked after by cripples and old men. So it finished up, I'm down in front of this tribunal again. And my guard got wrong for threatening us. And I finished up off the dam, and we went through the woods to where the material for the dam arrived, and we unloaded it and put it on a smaller gauge railway. Well, this was a longer walk, so we had to be up earlier. So we tried. The wagons used to come in all morning, but very few in an afternoon. And we got, after a lot of haggling and talking, our crowd of 40 was split into two gangs, and we worked 6 till 1 and 1 till 7 rather than 4 till 12 hours, which was much better for us. You had a rough week, and then the next week you're in the easy week, you're probably unloading from the warehouse, so you could take your time there. And you unloaded mostly box wagons, cattle wagons. And stopped us having cups of tea on the morning, but he always liked to break a cup of tea. And this White came up and stopped this. And the old man we had, he was a proper old man, passed his best by such a long way. And this Mr. White came up one day, and we were all sat having our teas. 10 o'clock. She says, you cannot have tea on this job, eh? So what we did, Tom Porter and I shared our parcel still and worked together. It took two of it to throw cement out, two of it to lift timber and all that. You always work together. But we've decided not to work together this day. I would work with someone else and he would. And we went off the site and boiled bits of sticks and that to make tea, water to make tea. And when my tea was ready, I would shout to Ginger Porter in the next wagon, and him and I would go for tea. which meant this guy wanted a partner. There was nobody working in his wagon, and there was nobody working in that wagon. And we had a 10-minute break. When we come back, they had a 10-minute break. So what they'd stopped for 10 minutes turned out to be a good half hour. And they paid a thing called demurrage on the wagons. If they weren't out, they paid rent on them till they got them emptied. Well, there's no wagons emptied by 7 o'clock at night. There was a little bit in each one. We used to hop from wagon to wagon, take a bit out there and a bit out there. So I went to work next morning, about 6 o'clock, and this old man waved us all over. He said, look at that. And he'd bought a great big lovely pan to boil water in to make tea. And we said, right, you're all right. He got his cup of tea. And he always got a pipe of tobacco off somebody or a cigarette. And he got the job going. Why, actually, we got the job going as we wanted it. And he was quite happy. The work was being done. It was getting down to the bottom. And, as I say, sabotage was an awful word with them. And to tear or drop 100 weight of cement was the accolade of sabotage. And we used to slide into these little tubs. You could get 50 level loaded by a system. So we had a competition to see if we could load it back up with another 50, which was impossible because they were always stringing. And the Italians did all the skill jobs. When they came with the little tankies to get these bogies to take them through the wood, don't they? So as ever they touched the buffers, they all tipped over. Why, we blamed the Italians, the Italians blamed us, the Germans blamed everybody. And the outcome was they brought loose cement in boxes, not bags. Why, we wouldn't go in here without Wellingtons and rubber trousers. So I had a rare battle, and we had to unload them. So instead of shoveling it down, we used to chuck it in the air. And the village, surrounding village, was absolutely covered in cement. They wouldn't get a quarter of the cement they brought in these trucks. And by the Friday, they couldn't get any more trucks in. There was that many waiting to be unloaded. So our Sergeant Major came, RSM. He said, I think you've done enough, lads. You know, you could raid the situation if you were sensible. And we got back to work and we got it going pretty well. And it was quite a good camp. There was, we worked about 6 or 7 hours, which wasn't a bad shift. And again, you could find a one that knew, and we could never ever get cleaned when we'd been unloading cement. We used to try and wash it off, and you couldn't. And we had a lad called Burgess, he's on one of those photographs, sharpening that saw. He came from Hull, and he worked in the cement business for Blue Circle, I think it was, at Hull. And he knew that the only way to get low cement off you was a shower. Run it off. Don't try to rub it off. Let it run off. So we decided to ask for showers in the washroom. And they said, well, you can have two if you'll get somebody to make them. Because one thing I haven't mentioned, you always had to say on your prisoner of war records was your occupation. Well, I was a cricketer. I was down as a groundsman cricketer. Nobody wanted a groundsman cricketer in Germany. There was nurses, but nobody had a trade. Just one man, strange enough, and he said he was a worked in a sawmill, bandsaw, which he did. And that lad nearly cut his hand up. He was the only one that worked at this trade. None of us said, oh no, we don't know anything about that. He didn't know any. There was no electricians or fitters or anything like that. And I was in this camp till about December.
Before you go on, you mentioned your tea breaks.
Yes.
You'd have a lunch break, did you?
Oh yes, you had your tea. You had your dinner. You took your own sandwiches, your own rations up. Because you only got your food when you went back at night.
And that would be the usual kind of food, wasn't it?
Yes, you never got a pudding or a knife and fork job. It was all spoon jobs, soups and such like. Of course, all they had was these big boilers in the cocos.
And the beginning of this was through the winter, of course. That would be the winter of 43, 44. And you were able to keep warm.
Oh, yes, well, we had this huge stove. That was another thing with the Red Cross rules. We had this huge, great big stove. We used to have it red hot. In fact, we used to stick bread on the side. It was that hot, and it would toast. Of course, it was all German black bread that you got. And we used all the cocoa. And no coal left. So we asked for some more coal. Oh, they said that was your winter's ration. But they hadn't told us these were not coal then. So it was decided we would pinch as much timber as we could off this job. For every gang that came in, every 20 that came in, there would be about four gangs of 20, I think, in the camp. Battens, posts, everything was leaving this camp. And they saw smoke coming out the hut one day, and they said, thought you had no coal left, you're not allowed coal fires now. We said, we haven't got a coal fire. And again, like, we had a wood fire, so they lost that argument, you know, and believe it or not, you could win arguments with on words like that. Not that I was clever enough to think of them, it was always this clerk, actually, two or three of them from London. Clever lads, brainy lads, in that respect, because they couldn't work, had no idea how to use a shovel.
You mentioned the Red Cross inspector who came out.
Yes.
Did they have a great deal of influence, the Red Cross?
Oh, yes, yes. That was one thing about the Germans. They believed in and they respected the Red Cross Code. And if whatever they asked you would ask to get, if it was possible, they would get it for you. As I say, this day we wanted better facilities on when we were building this road. It all happened on a Saturday afternoon. And we had an old shed outside which two of the lads, they got concrete from the dam brought over, and two of the lads concreted the floor and put the showers in, two or three showers for this cement job.
Was there any brutality shown by the guards against you?
Not against us, but I did say where we used to, our camp was on the rivers of the, on the banks of the River Drow, and across the river to the left a bit was the dam, and straight across was the River Drow, which was a lovely river. We used to swim in it when we got the chance for a bath. And we once saw an Italian come for a swim about 9 o'clock at night, because they were treated like animals, the Russians and the political prisoners. There was all sorts of Russians, political prisoners, Italians and us, all sorts of prisoners. And we had the best time of the lot, because we were the only ones who were Red Cross represented. And this Italian came. We don't know to this day why, but he went in the river, whether he went for a swim or whether it was deliberate, we never ever found out. But we used to do a little bit PT. Lads were doing weightlifting. They used to make weights and do weightlifting, skipping and things like that. And we were sat and somebody said, you know, I've never seen that Italian come out of the water. And we sat and watched this. His clothes were still there. Why, somebody says, he must have come out now. He can't be in the water for 2 hours, not swimming in the cold river. the end we thought he had come out. And about a week later, his body bumped up again the top of the dam. About 11:45 in the afternoon. And the high tides went to get him out. And the jury said, if you want him out, you get him out in your time. And they had no dinner that day. They got the mate out and buried him. And that's the sort of thing that, odd times, if you found a bad guard, we had one, an SS man, who had been injured in Russia and came to us because he was injured. Nasty man.
What was he like as far as treating you went?
Oh, nasty. You're right. You see, what a lot of people don't understand about the SS. The SS was mainly made up of foreign people to the Germans. We were asked to join a British regiment to fight the Russians. Russians were asked to join a regiment to fight the British. And there was Holland, Italy, there were Danes, there was all sorts in the SS who, once they joined the SS, when the war began to go against Germany, were now faceless people and they couldn't go home. Everybody knew they were SS. So these were the cruel and rough people. The Germans were SS, but orders were carried out quite comfortably and no bother at all to be cruel by these foreign SS people. And this man came just when Hitler was supposed to be blown up. And a theory we always had, we always said that in that bomb Hitler did die. And there were other people put in his place, because our orders were all changed and they were all signed by Himmler instead of Hitler from then on. And the camp running changed. For instance, if you were off on a Sunday afternoon, we used to go into a part of the wood where there was a clearing and we would play football. And they would let us do this, providing we would only go with two guards. Because when you went out, there was a guard was supposed to be with every eight people. And to give these guards a break, we said, right, on Sunday afternoon, we'll accept this. And we got into the woods for a bit of recreation. But this was stopped, and you had to do it properly. But you must have recreation outside recreation. So, again, in comes the awkwardness. And if you can't play football, we'll go for a walk. But there wasn't enough guards to take the whole camp for a walk. So you had to take them in groups. So the poor guards started about 8 o'clock on Sunday morning and worked about 8 o'clock on Sunday night, taking everybody for a 2-mile walk in the turns. And the next night it was this SS man that kept this going from the orders on the board. And they said, nuts to you, mate, that we're going to play football. They're playing football next week. We shot it because they've been on guard all night. They had to go back on guard again at night. And all our pamphlets, I mean, you were always getting big posters stuck up about the main one was fraternization. And fraternization happened when you went into town. And the only time you went into town, you were either going to a dentist or you were going to a hospital. Because you had to try and find ways and means how to deal. And bad backs, teeth ache and bad ears was the three main items. And if you nudge somebody in the town as you're walking, that was considered fraternisation. And for this, both you and the person you'd bump were going to be put into one of the camps, the Dachau or Belsen. The women went into one, you went in another. And all that was signed by Himmler from their own. And we never, whenever Hitler spoke, the country stopped. They had to listen. And we never heard him speak anymore. And we often wonder among ourselves. And the fact that this body was burned in the bunker, why burn Hitler? You know, we always thought was so he wouldn't be recognised. Just a thought, a theory we had, because our lives changed after that. And Hitler wasn't interested in prisoners at all. He preferred you being killed.
And, how did you receive news about Hitler's, or the attempt on Hitler's life? Did it come through to you?
Oh, it was always on the grapevine at work. A guard would tell you. As I say, we now had the guards doing what we wanted. I mean, I've carried the guard's rifle back. I'm tired. I mean, they had to go for work for 8 hours, and then they had to do 8 hours duty, you know. And as I say, there were 16, there were 70, and they were good barterers. They would bring you proper mugs in. We all had a stein, for instance, to drink out of, which he'd bought. And
was there news of the war coming through to you?
Slowly, yes, and by now we could say that we were winning, because there wasn't a day went by unless there was flight after flight of flying forces up the Bugia, and absolutely no German resistance whatsoever in the air. In fact, it was once said, a German fighter pilot dropped a parachute with a gallon of petrol on, begging for the plane to come up, give us a fight, just save the monotony. Whether it was true or not, you don't know. But you did see these planes going over. And the bombing, I mean, wherever they were, the earth shook near you. The bombing was magnificent.
Just before we can go on to that later, just before we leave the question of the various people that were with you in the camp area, Russians and so on, did you see them being ill-treated?
Oh, the Russians were just, well, they weren't threatened, they were just left, they were just out of work. They had no clothes, they had no food. We used to feed them, actually. We used to leave bread at places, and they were farther along the road from us in their camp, and we used to leave. As I say, we had quite a lot of food by then. As I say, we were buying food. We got Red Cross. We got fed off the job and well fed. And you had a little bit surplus in which you could lay them a loaf of bread, because it was the horrible black bread. I mean, it would last years, the bread. It was used. We had bread marked 1939. You know, they made that sort of bread.
But were these political prisoners, prisoner of war, prisoners of war from other nations, were they working with you? Were the Russians working with you and the other people?
No, we were all kept apart because of the news thing, you know. As I say, I worked up on the unloading depot all the time.
Was your camp that you talked about, was that wired in?
Yes, it was a wired camp, yeah. Oh, yeah, it all wired in. You never got out, you never allowed out. I say, if you went out, the guard took you to the dentist to get your syringe or get your back examined. One little item I must talk about. Again, this Tiger Flowers, the funny man. In the town of Marburg, which is about 4 miles away, was a big military camp. And on odd occasions, they would let the Britishers go there, POWs, from various camps, to see a film. And we went to this film. It was all propaganda, the films. And you could never smoke. Well, immediately the news came on. This was a signal for everybody to light a cigarette, so you got put out the pictures. And one Sunday morning, and this Tiger Flower was a full corporal, he was in charge of the parade. And when you went to the pictures, you must be dressed in your best dress, boots cleaned as best you could, cap badges cleaned as best you could, trousers pressed. You must look smarter than your guard. And we marched into this town, about 5 miles. And when we got in town, well, everybody you met, there was brown uniforms, grey uniforms, sailors uniforms, black shirts, everybody had a uniform, and they were all saluting each other. And on every block of corner of every street was a shadow of Churchill. And it used to have on, shh, the devil mit uns, the devil is with us, listening. Well, Tiger Flowers marched up and down this column, he says, right, he says, at the next corner, we're saluting Churchill, right? So we marched down this town, and when we got near, he shouts, march to attention. Eyes right, and saluted this shadow of Churchill. Everybody looked, and a policeman realized, no, we're all wheels into jail for the day.